Today's program was brought to you by Patina Events at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, an idyllic location for weddings, corporate events, and parties of any style. Visit us at patinaevents.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're getting semantic to understand the deeper meaning behind some of the foods we love. First, we'll look at the big debate happening around the word milk.
Who the hell are you to tell me what is the name of my product and my landscape and everything we've cared about when, you know, you don't have anything invested in except to put out a little money to buy it? It's our entire life.
Then we get the lowdown on the language of cider.
So the first thing that's really confusing about dryness is that it has nothing to do with how something actually feels in your mouth.
And finally, we get our fill of tiki talk.
You don't walk into a tiki bar and be like, oh yeah, this is what Polynesia is probably like. Like, it's supposed to be like fantasy and stuff. That's the hard part. It's so easy to do tiki bad, and that's where it gets a bad name.
Tune into this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
On Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. This is the 213th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, I have a special on-the-road episode from the 2019 Philly Chef Conference, which took place from March 9th to 11th at Drexel University in Philadelphia. And I will be chatting with Mike Trod, the conference founder and event chair. Plus, I have a couple interviews with two of Copenhagen's most respected chefs and restaurateurs, Matt Orlando of Amas Restaurant and Christian Bauman of 108 and The Corner. But first, as I do on every show, I will tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So as the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm tipping off the show, and here we go. The tip is to be responsible. Take ownership in what you do and what you say and for your actions. Being responsible means being dependable, keeping promises, and honoring your commitments. It means accepting consequences and owning up to your mistakes. Only we can be accountable for ourselves, as it is our lives. So take responsibility always. That's my tip today. Now, to kick off my special On the Road episode, again, it's from the Philly Chef Conference 2019, I have on the phone Mike Trod. He is the conference founder and event chair. So, hello, Mike. How are you?
Good, Sherry. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm assuming you're in Philadelphia.
I am in Philadelphia as we speak.
Nice. Well, I'm in Brooklyn. So, and it was such a treat to come out to Philly for the conference, my first time attending. I'd love to know what inspired you to start the conference, and what year was that? How many years have you been doing it?
So this was our 6th year. So basically, about 6 years ago, I transitioned from working in the restaurant industry and kitchens to education. And, you know, getting into education, I can see there's, you know, a gap between, you know, what was going on in industry to what was going on in education, and just to create a conference that can bring industry together with students and kind of bridge that gap and connect all the dots.
And how did it grow over the years? Because this conference this past year seemed to be very elaborate. You had a lot of things going on between the student day on Saturday, which I was honored to teach a PR class, to the all of the parties, to the reception, to the full day of lectures and panels you had on Monday. So how did it grow since the beginning?
Well, I think the first couple years was trying to kind of really develop and get engagement with the Philadelphia restaurant community. So I think that's probably the first 2-3 years. But then, it got to the point where we were able to attract outside speakers and continue to grow that. And then this year was the goal was to get as many people from outside of Philadelphia to participate and engage our community. Because I see the value of a conference is to engage and meet new people that you don't see or connect with on an everyday basis.
Right. So how did you go about that? Because you had chefs coming in from around the world. It was a really impressive lineup.
Yeah, it's a lot of kind of connecting with individuals and, you know, building on prior years and then meeting people at, you know, great conferences, being able to go to the MAD conference and connect with Matt Orlando and Christian and, you know, convince them to come over to Philadelphia and participate in the conference.
Well, you were able to do so successfully.
Yeah, I mean, it all worked out. And, you know, it's just kind of connecting the dots. And I think people enjoy attending because they get to kind of connect with individuals that they normally don't get to see either.
Right. Were there any particular highlights on your end that you'd like to point out or tell a little more about the structure of between the Sunday night, having the different panels and moving into the reception and then the Monday, how there were also different paths people could take, whether they wanted a demo or more to hear people talking on a panel, which I thought was great to have those options.
You know, I think the day one was, you know, very well, the two panels and being able to, you know, get Kat Kinsman and, you know, Michael Solomonoff on a panel with Tim Carman from the Washington Post. And then also to have Jeff Gournier, you know, moderate a panel, but also his assistance in getting restaurants that were on his best new restaurant list, you know, from Texas to Minneapolis to come and, you know, participate in reception. So to have, you know, not just great speakers, but, you know, amazing food from throughout the United States represented in Philadelphia for 2 days.
Right. And then on Monday, the full lineup, there was a lot going on. And even lunch, you brought in, you know, you brought in all the top spots and or places in Philly that I think people have read about and are curious about food wise to try.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where you really want to highlight Philadelphia and being able to, you know, having worked in the past with, you know, Ben Miller, who is, you know, co-owner of South Philly Barbacoa, and Christina Martinez. They've been doing lunch for the conference for the past 4 years. And then, you know, just to kind of get, you know, new people represented and, you know, gets a good vibe between the Philadelphia, but also our out-of-town guests.
Yeah, no, it was delicious. It was a great lunch. So are you already looking ahead for next year? Are you going to plan a conference around the same time in March?
Yeah, I already have the date settled for next year, so it'll be March 1st and 2nd. And, you know, I always keep a pad with, you know, names and my wish list and people that I jot down throughout the year and then generally start reaching out, you know, after the 4th of July to get on people's radars because there's so many different events and conferences going on throughout the years that you want to, you know, get ahead of the game and get on people's calendars.
Yeah. It sounds like what I do for my show. I always have moments where all of a sudden I think of someone that would be great to have on and I just jot it down just so I don't forget.
Yeah. So it's a lot of plotting and, you know, connecting the dots and seeing if, you know, past participants have connections to, you know, possible future participants.
Yeah, well, you made it look really easy to throw a conference, I have to say.
But you know what? It works because people in the hospitality industry are, you know, willing to participate, willing to, you know, donate their time, and they understand how these events run, and, you know, they help it run, you know, extremely smoothly.
Right, and you also had the volunteers from the school, which was, they were all very helpful. And I think,
yeah, it's really nice. We get to have a class that, you know, it's not just talking about event planning. It's the actual planning and executing of an event over 2 to 3 days, and getting the students involved is one of the main aspects of the conference to really kind of get them connected to the industry that they're going to eventually graduate and join.
Right. Makes sense. Well, I was so glad to be a part of it. I'll mark my calendar for next year. Maybe I can come back again. And
we'd love to have you.
Thank you. And thank you so much. And I wish you the best and have a great, I guess, a great school year, the rest of the year.
Thank you. Yeah, a couple more months, but I'm really looking forward to listening to the interviews with Matt and Christian.
Cool. Yeah, they're we're going to play them back now. So I hope you enjoy. It was I figured while I was there and I had the opportunity to interview the two of them all the way coming in from Copenhagen, I had to take it. So
perfect. Well, that's great.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We're going to take a little break here and then we're going to come back and we're going to have my two interviews with Copenhagen chefs. So stay tuned.
Patina Restaurant Group offers unparalleled service in New York's most iconic locations, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center, and Macy's Herald Square. Patina is also the exclusive caterer at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. From meetings and presentations in the glass-walled atrium, to galas in the renovated Palm House, and intimate wedding showers at Yellow Magnolia Cafe, your event will be perfectly imagined and customized at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. You can also enjoy a la carte brunch and lunch at the picturesque Yellow Magnolia Cafe overlooking Lilypool Terrace. Executive Chef Morgan Jarrett's unique menu offers warm, distinctive cuisine with a focus on local vegetables, grains, and sustainably sourced meats and fish.
Welcome back to All in the Industry. I'm Sherry Bayer, and today I'm doing a special on the road episode from the 2019 Philly Chef Conference. And now I have an interview that I did with Matt Orlando. He is the chef and owner of Amas Restaurant in Copenhagen. Now, I've been super lucky to have dined not just once at Amas, but I've been there twice. And the first time I went solo, and if you want to go back to episode 152, I talked about it as my solo dining experience. And on that visit, I didn't meet Matt because he had just had a baby, and so he wasn't there. But then this past fall, I was back. I went for lunch with some friends. It was during the MAD symposium, and I met him. So we got to know each other a little bit. And so when I was at Philly, I reached out and I said, hey, can I do an interview for my show? So we sat down and we talked about his background, about what led him to work for Rene Redzepi in Copenhagen and eventually opened his own restaurant. So the interview's, it's over 20 minutes, and I hope you enjoy it. And so here's me talking with Matt Orlando.
Yeah. Why don't we talk, you talk a little about your background and how you got into cooking.
So I moved to New York and, well, I started working at a pizza place when I was 14 years old.
Okay, and, in San Diego.
Yeah, and that was just to make money because my dad said if I, whatever money I saved up for a car, he would match it so I could buy a car.
Okay.
And then I saved up, I don't know, like $5,000 for a car. And then I went to my dad and said, okay, Dad. And I had been looking, I was like, I'm just getting this, because I snowboarded a lot. I'm going to get this sick truck and it costs about $10,000. And I have $5,000. My dad's going to give me $5,000. So I go to my dad and I said, Dad, okay, I have $5,000. This is the truck I want to get. And he looks at me and goes, you could get a great car with $5,000. So, yeah. So I ended up getting a four-wheel drive Subaru station wagon.
Okay.
Still to go snowboarding, not a truck like I thought I was going to get.
Well, it served a purpose.
Taught me a valuable life lesson. So then I worked at a restaurant called Chart House when I was 16 till I graduated high school.
Chart House, the restaurant?
It used to be like a...
It was like a restaurant group?
Yeah, a restaurant group, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Miami, and okay. I remember we had Chart House.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I worked there till I graduated high school, and then I graduated high school and moved to Lake Tahoe. To snowboard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, but I worked at Chart House up in Lake Tahoe as well. And then I moved back to San Diego, and I ended up working for a gentleman by the name of Francis Perot at a restaurant called Fairbanks. And that was like my first like real restaurant. This guy was born and raised in Paris and worked for Robuchon and Garnier, like when he was younger. And that was like my, like, I was like, okay, wow, this is really cooking. And also Francis himself, we're still friends. And Francis himself was just like an amazing teacher of not only cooking, but life lessons. And cooking for him was like cooking out on the roost. It was so classic. And I learned so much about technique, about food and how life, food and life are intertwined, and you have to pay respect to both. And then I, that really kind of lit the fire inside me, where I was just like, okay, this is maybe something I want to do on a professional level. And then I said to him, I'm going to move to New York. And he looks at me, he goes, this is amazing, Matt. You're going to go there, you're going to work hard, you're going to learn so much. But remember one thing. If you go down this path, you're never going to be rich. If you want to be rich, open a fucking pizza place.
Okay.
Those are the exact words.
I thought he was going to say get out of the industry
altogether. No, he said open a pizza place. That's your only way you're going to get rich in this industry. So I left for New York in 2001, and right after 9/11, and all my friends were like, you're still going? I was like, yeah, I'm going stuff. So I worked for Charlie Palmer at Oriole, in the old Oriole up on 61st.
I probably dined there when you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 61st, the old Oriole, and then I worked at Le Bernardin.
Amazing.
And then from Le Bernardin, I went to the UK, to Le Manoir, and then the Fat Duck. And then that at the Fat Duck is where I met, we had a, one of the stagiaires at the Fat Duck, we lived in a four-bedroom apartment, and three of us, chef de parties, rented rooms. In the fourth room, we always rented to stagiaires coming through just so we could meet different people. And this girl came through, Lena. She was from Denmark. She was an apprentice at Noma. She came, Renee sent her, this is when Noma had been home for like maybe a year, sent her to the Fat Duck for, I think it was 6 weeks. And she rented a room, and her and I just became really good friends. And then Renee came to eat at the Fat Duck while she was there, and we all went out for beers, and he and I started talking and just really connected. And he goes, what are your plans? I was like, I don't want to go back to the States. The Fat Duck is kind of my only way to stay here, because they're going to give me work permit. And then he goes, well, why don't you come up and check out my restaurant? And of course Lane had told me all about it, and it seemed like this, the unicorn of a restaurant up in Scandinavia and in Denmark. And Denmark, like when I told my friends that I was moving to Denmark, they're like, what's that, the capital of Sweden? And so yeah, and then I was 2 years as sous chef at Noma, back in like the earlier six of us in the kitchen back then.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Why didn't you want to move back to the U.S.?
Because I just felt like I hadn't been in Europe long enough.
Yeah.
I just wanted to experience more, see more of different cultures, because I'd only been in the UK. Yeah. So yeah, then I was at Noma for 2 years. And then that's where I met my now wife in 2005.
Nice.
And she's Danish. She was a waiter apprentice in the dining room.
Okay.
And then we both had job opportunities to go back to New York. She actually, both to Per Se, myself as a sous chef and her work in the dining room. And so we went back to, I had a 3-year contract as a manager, so as a sous chef, so back to Per Se for 3 years. Those 3 years are, I would say, aside from opening my own restaurant, the highlight of my career. The culture, the how when you work for Thomas, there's no, the perpetual problem in restaurants across the board, no matter where you are, is communication. Because there's so much information floating around all the time, that how do you harness all that information and be able to distill it back to your employees? And Thomas has, there's no gray areas when you work for Thomas. It's all there for you. All the tools to succeed are there, and it's up to you to realize what they are and how to use them. And it's like it's a really intellectual kitchen to work in regards to how you manage yourself and how you interact with your colleagues. But it's like it sounds so weird, and so, it's a weird thing to say, but the first 3 months you're there is miserable, because things are just done a certain way. People work and behave and interact with each other a certain way, that's just how it is. So coming from a place like Nomo where things are very kind of loose, and or back then very loose, and kind of everyone has a chance to have input, and things aren't just, weren't super organized, to a place where it was like, this is how it's done. And once you kind of give yourself to that way of working and thinking and interacting with your colleagues, it becomes the most, it's like joining a cult, pretty much.
Right.
And it stays with you forever. There are, I would say, 99% of my mannerisms in the kitchen, how I organize myself, how my thought process about certain situations, all stem from working for Thomas.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. Or I should say stem for, I would say, within working for Thomas, the person that kind of had the biggest, one of the biggest impacts on my career is Jonathan Benham, who was the chef de cuisine there when I was there.
Right.
Amazing human being. Like,
I know Jonathan. I've dined at his new place, Benno,
yeah,
which got a really nice review.
Amazing
in the
review.
New York Times. Very happy for him. See, he's yeah, I remember when he was with Per Se, and then he went to Lincoln, and I'm a huge Thomas Keller fan and that whole group. I was down in Miami, and I went to
the
surf
club. How was it?
It was special. So after Per Se, what brought you back to Copenhagen?
My wife and I actually initiated the conversation to go back to Copenhagen, because we had, like I said, I had a 3-year contract with Thomas, and when Julie, my wife, when we moved back to New York, we thought that was it. We're moving back to New York. We're going to work for Thomas for a few years, and then we're going to open our own place in New York. And then after like 2 years into my 3-year contract, I kind of initiated the conversation. I was like, she said to my wife, like, what do you think about New York? Do you still want to stay here? Because I was really kind of leaning maybe not to stay and go back to Europe. And she was actually, it took a little bit of convincing, because she was actually really, I mean, young Danish girl coming to New York. It's very Sex in the City. Like, it was
right.
Very, it was, she loved New York for 14 years.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
In this industry.
Yeah. And we have, I can honestly think of only like 3 nights where we like went home from work and we were kind of like a little bit like at each other.
Yeah.
2 of them, which were at a mass, because we opened a mass together, so there's a bit more kind of heart and soul for each of us into it.
But that's a very low number.
Oh, man. Trust me. When I say to my friends, I was like, yeah, we've worked together 14 years, and we've only like 3 times had like a rough night after work. They're like, I would kill my other every night. So, no, we worked together. We had at Per Se, when we started, they had a very strict, like, no intercompany dating. And so when we applied at Per Se, it was really, or when we were caught, or she applied, and then I applied after coming back, and then we got hired. And, you know, through my hiring process, I came to Chef Benno, and I was like, I just need to be, because I had read in the employee manual, like, no intercompany dating. And I just took Chef Benno aside and said, Chef, just so you know, Julie and he stopped me right there, and he looks at me and he goes, Orlando, do you think I'm stupid? Attractive young Danish girl just happens to apply when an American coming back from Denmark is applying at the same time. I'm not an idiot. He's like, you just keep it cool, okay? And so we were at Per Se, there was a long, of course our friends knew, but there was a lot of, we were very, like, when I was expediting, and I remember one night, this guy, Kenny, had been working there for like 3 months, and Julie came, was just the first guest sat down, and Julie came back in to give me some information about the table and where they were from, and she walked away, and Kenny looks at me and he goes, Chef, what's up with that Danish girl, man? Like, man, is she single? Is she... I was like, oh, I think she has a boyfriend, Kenny. And
very handsome, and successful boyfriend.
And he goes, "Oh, really? Like, what's he do?" I was like, "I think he's in the industry." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "He must be it. Just be a douchebag or something." I was like, "Oh, I think he's. I've met him. I think he's pretty cool." He goes, "Really? Where does he work?" I was like, "Works at Per Se." And I just like looked at him, and he goes, "Chef, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry."
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I felt bad. I baited him into that one.
he had to tell him though.
Yeah. So we started talking, and then I called Renee, and I said, "You know, Renee, we're thinking about coming back, and you know, I don't want to come back to Noma because I've already been to Noma, and I want to probably come back somewhere and get a job as a sous chef just to get back into the re-meet all the producers that we worked with before and just understand the landscape." And then he goes, "Okay, I'll keep my ears open." And then like 3 days later, he calls me back and he goes, "Matt, I can't. This is what has to happen." He's like, "You're coming back. I need to hire my first chef de cuisine at Noma. I've racked my brain for the last 3 months about who that might be. Your name, it just keeps circling back around you. It's like, if you come back anywhere else in Noma here, I think you're going to, after working for Thomas Keller, I think you're going to be really disappointed and not really challenged." And he goes, "Why don't you, I'm offering you the chef de cuisine position at Noma." And so, of course, that's like a, it's not much thinking to go.
Right. And what year is this?
Like towards the end of 2007.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I came back and it was 3 years at Noma as head chef. And
then what inspired you to open your own place?
I think it's over. I was very clear to Renee when I came back and I said, "No, I'm coming back, Renee. My long-term goal is to open my own place in Copenhagen." And he was he's like, "That's amazing. That's amazing for not only me because you're my friend and you're going to take from Noma and but it's also amazing for the city itself to have a chef actually move here to open their own restaurant because that no one had really
right.
done that before, a foreigner opening a restaurant in Copenhagen." And so he said, he's like, "You only need to commit for 1 year." And then I was like, "I mean, I'm not going to come as a chef to cuisine for 1 year. It's going to take me 1 year just to organize the kitchen in the way I think it should be organized." And it was funny because coming back from Thomas Keller and going into Noma, which is very, like I was saying, very loose, and I had a very formulated, calculated plan for going back, and because I had worked there before, so I knew somewhat of the logistics and how it worked, and to really organize it. And I came back, and it was, there's a little bit of a sense of, like, the biggest difference between Noma and Per Se is that Per Se is very calculated, and like everything is really forecasted in how things are done. So there's not a lot of room to be spontaneous. And I saw really quickly after I got back to Noma that one of the driving points behind the old Noma is that, because the new Noma, they're very calculated now. It's like, cool. It's very...
I was going to ask you that because I never dined at the old Noma.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to Bar in the space, but I've dined at the new Noma, and from my experience or observations, it seems very organized, calculated.
It is. I mean,
extremely so. I was wondering,
that's not how the old Noma was at all.
Was that a switch with Renee and the system when they moved locations, or was it like
a gradual thing? They have the test kitchen now.
Right.
And that produces pretty much all the menus. And then that is kind of fed to the main kitchen. But now because the way they have like seafood, vegetable, and game season, the menus for the whole season are locked in for the season. So the menu is developed and then that's the menu they run for three months or however long they run it. So I saw very quickly that there's that kind of spontaneous and maybe not the most efficient way of working, was something that made Noma so unique back in the day. Now, with all that said, realizing that accepting inefficiency on some levels allows you to create something magical. So when I left Noma and did a mass, that was kind of always in my head, but I thought it could be done in a more calculated way, like a more intentional way. Mm-hmm. So a mass, we are extremely organized and efficient wherever we can be, and there are systems in place for certain things that just everyone knows the system and they just run, and it took a while to find this balance, which by organizing yourself on the back end of it and everything, you know, things are just going because everyone knows the system, it frees headspace up to be spontaneous, like in the moment during service. And if 5 kilos of the most amazing chanterelle mushrooms come in the back door at 6:30 at night when we've been open for a half an hour, we know systems are in place, the service is gonna run. One person can break off, clean all the chanterelles, and we can get them on the menu halfway through service to be spontaneous like that.
So you're combining your backgrounds into your own place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's what, when you open your own place, that's
right.
That's what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you define your cuisine or your menu or your concept at a mass, in your own words?
I would say it's hyper. Everyone says, yeah, we do seasonal cooking, but this is like hyper seasonal. Like seasons within seasons cooking. Yeah. And it's, I would say, somewhat spontaneous, because I think that word in cooking is being lost a little bit. Like everyone has test kitchen now. And everyone's like really
rigid.
Just afraid to kind of, okay, so products are coming in, let's cook with them.
Right.
And so it's test this and test that and blah, blah. So like hyper seasonal, spontaneous, and responsible. Responsible is the word, if I had to define it.
Yeah. Because, it's a good word.
Yeah, because that word is now defining our creative process as well. Like that's how we look at ingredients, how we process the ingredient, and also new flavor profiles that we're finding that none of us really tasted before through the upcycling of parts of the ingredient that people generally don't use.
Right. And you have your own beautiful garden.
Yeah.
Did that open or launch at the same time that you opened the restaurant?
Yeah.
It kind of went together?
Yeah, we opened it, but that garden was half the size. For the first 3 years, I mowed the lawn out there for the first 3 years because it was kind of like my
Your
zen
thing.
Time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I always added like a half a meter on the edge every time I mowed the lawn, so... It's just this
it's or funny.
Fall Trigger last land. Year. Yeah. Fall last year, though, the landlord sent me an email. They're like, we see what you're doing. It's fine. Don't do it anymore. So I don't think the garden will get bigger.
Well, it's pretty big.
It's big, yeah. It's great. And over 5 years, we've really figured out what grows best out there, because we're so close to the ocean right there, that it's quite harsh. It can be maybe 75 Fahrenheit in the daytime and 40 at night, and so a lot of plants can't really handle that, even though it's not freezing, that temperature swing. So figuring out what plants can't handle it, and then those plants that can't handle it are super strong, and the flavor is so intense. The stuff that comes out of that garden surprises me sometimes.
So what would you say is the biggest difference between running restaurants and working in Copenhagen versus the United States?
I think that if I compare it to working in New York, is that restaurants in the States have to, and this is going to sound come out wrong, but I don't know any way to say it, have to really like cater to their clientele, like, okay, change stuff around so you can get more guests in, and more tables and stuff like that. Whereas in Denmark, people are coming to eat there for that.
Because I think it's amazing you're here. You came in to Philadelphia specifically for this conference?
Yeah.
Very cool. What are you doing at the conference?
I'm really happy today, the first day of the conference. I don't have anything to do, so I can actually go and
eat.
Just be a part of the conference. I'm going to be there all day. I want to see all the talks. I want to, because I also come to these conferences. I also want to get something out of it. And then tomorrow, I at 11 on a panel discussion with Ben Shuri and Katie Button about actually modern menu development and how that looks. And I just did a. Ben and I cooked last year around this time in Melbourne together.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've been to his restaurant.
Yeah, Ben is an amazing, amazing human. Like, we spent a week together writing the menu for the dinner we were doing. And that's the first time we got to hang out and just kind of really get to know each other, and also just how we work and how we cook. And it was such a good experience. And we actually talked a lot about menu development on that trip and the different factors from staff to ingredients and how it affects. So I'm it was really cool that we got put on this panel together. And then in the afternoon, I'm doing a master class.
On what?
So I brought a suitcase full of all the different things that we've kind of upcycled into delicious things. And when Mike was asking me what I need, I said, because he was under the pressure it was going to be like a master class and somewhat of a small theater type presentation. I said, no, I need 2 long tables, I need 60 little bowls, and a bunch of tasting spoons, because all 50 people are going to gather around these tables, and we're going to sit there, and we're going to taste, and we're going to talk about stuff.
You did something similar to that at the MAD conference,
kind of thing.
It was very interesting and cool. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
You can sit there, and you can talk, and point at pictures, and yes, right. We do this, but... I truly believe like tasting is just has such a bigger impact.
And interactive too.
Exactly.
I think it's more fun.
And I also want to get something out of that experience.
Right.
I want people's opinions on things, and I want people's ideas, and I want to walk away from that experience with new ideas in my head as well.
Terrific. Well, that's great. I was thinking, do you want to play my speed round game before we end this interview?
I fire away.
Okay. I've been doing the show long enough. I know it by heart.
Uh-huh.
So what it is I name a couple things, and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Yeah.
Okay. So here we go.
Go.
Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Beer.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Yeah, that depends on the environment. I would say tipping, because I like to leave big tips.
At Amos, is it all-inclusive?
Tipping? Well, everyone gets paid a good salary, so anything that's tipped is kind of extra.
Okay.
But it's different because that salary is not, like, tips aren't, there's no inclusive on the menu, it's just, that's...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, a few more. Biking in Copenhagen or any other mode of transportation?
Biking.
Love biking in Copenhagen. Oslo or Stockholm?
Oslo. The best beer bars, one of the best wine bars, Brutal, in Oslo is amazing wine bar.
I went to Oslo before this
last
trip.
Sorry, Brutus, not Brutal.
Didn't go there, but I loved the dining scene in Oslo. Okay, 2 more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, San Diego, or Copenhagen?
I answered Copenhagen.
Copenhagen wins. That's the game.
That's it?
That's the game,
and I'll take chocolate over vanilla any day.
You would take chocolate? Yeah. I'm a chocolate person.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
I don't I think so. I'm just looking forward to this conference. I think these conferences are so cool because it is cool to come for the content of the conference, but I think especially for chefs, it's always an opportunity to like Ben Shuri's here.
It's networking. It's the seeing. It's the connecting.
It's seeing people. It's seeing your friends that you all of us work so much in. To when you get a chance to come together, like Ben, as soon as we both were booked on, I think we both texted each other within 12 hours saying, oh, I can't wait to see you.
Well, it's incredible. We're in Philadelphia. He's coming from Australia. Yeah. You're coming from Denmark. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, totally.
So, cool. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Diane Stemple.
And I'm Elena Santigade, and we're the hosts of Cutting the Curd here on Heritage Radio Network. Featuring interviews with makers and mongers and everybody in between, this show is a downright funky look at the world of artisan cheese.
You can find Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're tuning into a special On the Road episode from the 2019 Philly Chef Conference. You just heard my interview with Matt Orlando of Amas Restaurant. And I just have to say, this show, you're going to get two speed rounds because it's a special show. But you heard he called out Oslo, and I just want to say, I loved Oslo so much when I visited, I wrote about it. If you go to fathomaway.com, there's an article that I wrote about Oslo in the dining scene. So if you guys want to check that out in your spare time, please do. Okay, so next up, I have another amazing Copenhagen chef. It is my interviews with Christian Baumann. He is the chef and co-owner of Restaurant 108 and The Corner. He also worked with Chef Rene Redzepi. So I was fortunate to meet Christian this time on my second visit to Copenhagen when I was there for the Mad Symposium back in the fall, and I dined at 108. I also went to The Corner, and it was fabulous. So honored to sit down with him as well. This interview is a little shorter. It's still almost about 20 minutes, but I hope you enjoy. This is me talking with Christian Baumann. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little bit like 35 kilometers outside Copenhagen.
Okay.
And so I'm adopted. So I came to Denmark when I was 4 months. The first 4 months of my life was very back and forth between orphanage and my mom. And then when I was 4 months, I came to Denmark and was raised in a small city 35 kilometers outside Copenhagen with my sister and my brother and my parents. And it's a very quiet life. I was a very energetic young boy. And it's very into all kinds of sports. And I think that, I mean, that's ultimately also what led me to the kitchens and the restaurant industry. Because when I was at a boarding school for... like a sport boarding school, then at that school we were not only there to just, you know, to perform in sports and you know, and go attend to school, but also they had us cleaning and we were cooking in the kitchen, and everybody sort of like saw it as a duty. But I really loved the atmosphere and being there with the ladies who were, you know, assigned to take care of us as the children, yeah, to be cooking for us and guiding us. And I think they saw that, you know, that I didn't care about if we had to, you know, peel potatoes or pick parsley or whatever it is, and I really enjoyed it. I've always followed Rene throughout my career. When they opened in 2003, already back then, the hype in Copenhagen was that people were talking about it, but sort of like this, you know, this outsider, and Rene had, you know, he was very young at the time. But
he was still young.
I mean, but he was young. So he had a good, you know, a good reputation, and I think that he was doing something different, and it appealed. I remember that the first time I heard about the restaurant, my former head chef told me about it, and I asked her, you know, what is it? And she said, oh, they're trying to do this and this, and you should go and see, and you know, maybe we can figure out one day if you can go there. I actually applied that when I was an apprentice. I applied that, but you know, they didn't accept apprentices back then, or I never heard back from them. So throughout the years, I was there, like many people, stashing, you know, on my days off. I was working other places, going to school, and then, you know, I would just work, and I, you know, because when you're very young, you have a lot of energy, so I didn't feel the need to rest. So when I wouldn't work at my permanent job, I would go and stash there, and that stash sort of led to, you know, a job there, and then I've always had good relations with all the people working there and known a lot of people. So going back and forth there has always been, you know, a very big part of my life. And with me ending up being in the place where, you know, I helped Christian Puglisi open up his restaurants, right, Malay and Manfred's, and that was a great experience for me. And so when I sort of, you know, decided that I wanted to have my own restaurant, I started working on it. I couldn't sleep, so I sort of just started writing a lot of things down. I didn't really have a plan, but I just started writing things down, and I told Christian, you know, I'll give you a year's notice, and I just can't sleep anymore. I need to pursue this. I don't have a plan. I don't have any money. I don't have an investor, but I just have a dream, and I need to pursue this. And he was very supportive, and I left, and I just continued writing on my, you know, my project. And with knowing Rene for so many years, I just asked him, you know, what's your professional opinion about this?
Right.
And he was like, I think we should have a cup of coffee. And I was just expecting him to say, I think it's terrible. What are you doing? You know, this is a bad idea. And he said, you know, I don't want another restaurant, but maybe I can, you know, help you find the money. And I sort of, I didn't expect that at all. So, yeah. And then we had a lot of coffee. We had a lot of talks. And we sort of, yeah, came to the conclusion that, you know, they will help me raise the money and we'll be partners. So, yeah, I came back to Noma, and then I helped out at Noma for a good 2 years. I helped them in Copenhagen, I helped them when they were in Japan, and then I went on full time to for the research for 108, and then the rest is history, so to speak.
Well, how did you find the space, yeah, which I've been to? It's, yeah, gorgeous, but it's very close to the original Noma space.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that before?
So that whole area before the there's a bridge now connecting Strandgade, which is the street where
right,
our restaurant is, and then Nyhavn. But before that, and all the years pretty much when Noma was at the original site, this was just an end of a dirt road. You know, there was nothing there.
I heard pre-bridge stories.
Yeah.
Because I've only seen it with the bridge, and it's very convenient now getting over
now
to that.
Now it's so
part
easy.
Of town.
I mean, it's you know, we went from being, you know, at the end of a dirt road to becoming like the center of Copenhagen,
right, yeah,
connected to it at least. And I think that's been very good for us. So that whole area is known for being like the outskirts of Copenhagen. The island right next to it is called the Paper Island, and that's where they used to sail and then dump all the, you know, the old newspapers and all the huge papers. So that's why it's called the Paper Island. The building, the original Noma is, used to be a storage space for salt.
Oh, wow.
And the building that we're in used to be an old whale fat storage. So actually, when we did the renovations and we had to build the ventilation system all throughout the building, they knocked down a wall and this very foul smell it came out of the wall.
Sorry,
and they realized
that memory. Yeah.
So, no, but I mean, it's a good story.
Right.
So, but it was just interesting that, you know, that happened during construction and so it's nice to have that history, and the building's been around for a long time, and I'm very proud and happy that we have that, and that's also why we chose the name for it, because it's an iconic building, and it's been around for such a long time, and we want to pay, you know, tribute to that.
That's the address.
That's the address. Okay. So that's why we wanted to call it. That's why it was named 108.
That's why it's 108.
Yeah, because it's a plan for the building.
And what was your concept when you were developing it? Has it changed in your own words? How do you define what you're doing?
I've always wanted to have a big restaurant, and I know for 85 seats for Americans is not a lot. That's a small restaurant for you guys.
It's pretty big.
So, but I mean, to me, to have 85 seats has always been, you know, that's a rather big restaurant, and so that was the original idea. We wanted to have a big space, and then we wanted to create something where the guests is able to choose their night. So when we opened, we had 10 a la carte dishes, and then we had 3 larger sharing dishes, one with fish and one with meat and one with vegetables, and you could have it for 2 or for 4 people. And this was because that at that time Copenhagen was sort of plagued by menus, 2-course like 3-course menus and 5-course menus and tasting menus and whatever, and I wanted to do something different. So I said, let's do a la carte only. Yeah, so 7.5 months in, we were awarded with a Michelin star. That it was never planned, our restaurant is like sort of like the opposite of what you would think of what a Michelin star restaurant would be.
Your food is beautiful. First of all, the plating, it's the presentation in itself. Yeah. It is special, so I'm not surprised you got that Michelin star.
But I mean, in terms of the restaurant decor, like the interior and everything, because you know we have sort of to me the creative process of developing something, that's what drives me, and that's whether it's food or you know working together with like extremely talented ceramist or you know this wonderful lady who has a program with you know. With people that she's trying to reactivate into the community again, and then she does it by developing, sustainable leather products. So we talked to her, and then we said, you know, we wanted to create something where the cutlery can be in. So after, you know, a couple of months, the tests back and forth, we came up with this cutlery pocket. And of course, it was also, you know, it's a great story, but we also did it because we wanted to be more functional and make it sort of a little bit easier on the waiters, so they could have more time to, you know, talk to the guests rather than putting the cutlery down. And when we worked with the ceramist who's done a lot of the plates for the restaurant, we said, you know, we know what the shape what that looks like, we know what the colors we want to create something together with you, and the same with the napkins and everything else. So we always put a lot of effort into every single little thing that we do, and we would have done that. No, I mean, Michelin star or not, that's what we do. And a lot of people started asking for, where's your tasting menu? Or you, chef, you just cook for us tonight, you decide. And I was like, but that's like the opposite of what I wanted to do. I wanted to create a space where you guys decide. So after like another six months of me making a new tasting menu every day, and for one table would have fish and the next table would have meat for main course, then you know we sort of said, okay, let's try and see what happens if we also put a tasting menu on. So at that point we ran 8-course tasting menu, 10 a la carte dishes, and then 3 larger sharing dishes. And that was a lot of mise en place, a lot of work. And then Noma moved, Right. And another restaurant opened in the original space, Bar. Which is called Restaurant Bar.
I've been there.
It's an amazing restaurant.
Really liked. I had a great experience
it's
there.
It's so good. It's so, so, so good. And so they opened. And I mean, it's literally like 50 meters away from our restaurant. And they opened with also a la carte. Very similar to what we have. The food is different, but in terms of concept, there's like 10. It was 10 a la carte dishes and then 2 sharing dishes. So we said, okay, maybe since now people are asking tasting menu from us, maybe we should just sort of rerun with that and rerun with the a la carte dishes, but we'll remove the larger sharing dishes. And now we change the menu 4 times a year to spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And then some of the a la carte dishes stays on for longer, and some of them changes accordingly to the season. But it's a format that works for us and works for our guests, which is the most important thing to me.
When did you open the coffee shop?
That opened at the same time as when we opened.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. So it was originally it was supposed to be a bakery, and then I said to Renee, you know what, I'm up for any task, but I'm not a baker.
But you have some great pastries.
Yeah, we do, and we bake the pastries, we make them by hand and bake them at the restaurant, and we also make our sourdough bread ourselves 100%.
Yeah.
But we're not bakers.
Right.
So I said, I think it's better we do something different, and I proposed that we do a cafe, and I'm so happy that we did that. I mean, it's a wonderful space, and it just has this ambience of there's always life there, and it gives us the opportunity to always have people in the building every day throughout the day because the restaurant opens at 5. So it's been a wonderful journey having the corner, as it's called, and we sort of like we do everything we can to continue developing that concept by itself.
I went back to the corner. I'd biked over there on my last day in Copenhagen and went in for pastries and coffee. It's a wonderful addition to Copenhagen to have that. What are you doing here in Philly? What's your role at the conference?
So Mike asked me to come here and take part of it. And of course, I'm very honored to be here. I think that it's. To me, when we wanted to come and take a part of it, something where it's so close to a university, I think that's, as you said earlier, I mean, it's wonderful to connect directly to people and see that, maybe you can inspire them to some greatness on their journey, and especially people who's enrolled in the university. So today we are going to cook snacks for 150 people later upstairs.
Just a little thing. Just a few snacks.
Just one snack. We're actually going to do a dessert, which is going to be a lot of fun, hopefully for people. And then tomorrow we are giving a cooking class or demonstration, which is around the sturgeon fish.
So, do you want to play my speed round game?
Yeah, sure. We can do that.
It's fun. Yeah. It's just I name a few things and you pick your preference.
Yeah.
It's a choice. So either chocolate or vanilla is an example.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Biking in Copenhagen or any other mode of transportation?
Biking.
Yeah, biking. Gotta go with biking. Okay, a few more. Oslo or Stockholm?
That's difficult. That's actually very different.
Finally
Stockholm.
Okay.
Stockholm.
Yeah. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Copenhagen? Or Philadelphia? Make it tough.
Yeah, I'll make it tough. I would say Manhattan.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to go with Copenhagen.
I mean, it's home. It's home. But I mean, I think in terms of traveling,
right.
I really like it. We just came, but I think it's also because I have a lot of friends there, and I, you know, I associate Manhattan with visiting friends, and that's what it's about to me. So to go there and then see all my friends, it makes me so happy, and it also makes me appreciate what I have back home a lot.
That is a perfect way to end this interview. It's a lovely note, and I'm glad you like Manhattan and visiting, and I think all those friends you visit like visiting you in Copenhagen. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations on everything. Thank
you. We'll hope to see you again.
Yes, I hope to be back.
Yeah.
Your host Sherry Bayer, and just give a shout out to Christian. Thank you for that interview. And I haven't written about Stockholm yet, but I guess there's still time. Also an amazing food city. Okay, so it's time for my solo dining experience. This week it's at Hopsing Laundromat. Here's the rundown. The location, 1029 Race Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The concept, it's a swanky, speakeasy-style bar known for its meticulously made cocktails and super hard door policy. The owner, it's a guy named Le. So why did I go? Because this cocktail bar is pretty legendary in Philadelphia. And when I saw Jeff Gordner at the conference, he mentioned if I'd been there, and I said I hadn't. So I was like, well, that's good enough reason to go. Jeff is telling me about this place. So in between events, my experience was, there were a bunch of cocktail parties for the conference, and I was at one at a place called Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and it was great. But after that, I went over to this Hopsing Laundromat, and I looked up online. They opened at 5. So I got there right at 5 o'clock, and I was the first person there. It's an unmarked, gated location. There's a little bell I rang, and a man in a suit came out, pretty intimidating, asked me, you know, what I was there for. I asked him if I was in the right location. He said I was. He asked me how many people were in my party. I said it was just me. And he said to stand on the side. In the meantime, more people had shown up. There was a party of 4. There was a party of 3. And they also approached him. And he said, he's behind the gate, by the way. And he said, wait to the side. So we were all waiting. And then he asked for my ID and for the IDs of the party of 4. He took them. We gave them to him. And then he went inside and he disappeared for a good 5 minutes. Came back, he returned our IDs, and he let me and the party of 4 in. We sat in this little room where we were told the house rules. The rules included no hats, and the big one was no photos, absolutely no photos. So we all agreed to follow the rules, and then we were allowed into this bar. So inside, took me a minute for my eyes to adjust because it was really dark, but it's a really cool space. And I was seated at the bar at the end. Of course, I was the first one in there. And the table, the people, the foretop, they went over to a foretop to sit because it's got a big dining room. So they have a cocktail book of over 70 plus different drinks. I spoke with the bartender. I asked him to make me a mocktail. He did. I also asked for the food menu at one point, and the bar back gave it to me kind of reluctantly. On the food menu, there are two things. There's egg drop soup and beef and broccoli. And at the bottom of the menu, it says it's going to take 45 minutes to make. And as I'm going back over this, I'm thinking, is this real? But yeah, this is really the experience. So I said I wanted the egg drop soup, and the guy told me it was going to take 45 minutes. I said, no problem. So it did. It did come at that point, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But at that point, you know, after being there for almost an hour, I was ready to go out with my cocktail, my soup. So I asked for the check, and I was on my way. So as I said, what did I get? I had my mocktail. It was with cucumber, lime, ginger, celery, mint, and black tea. And I also had this egg drop soup. So my take, the mocktail was really good. It had all these vegetable flavors. And the egg drop soup was actually delicious. And I don't remember the last time I'd had egg drop soup, and I certainly have never had it in a swanky bar. Okay, so the ambiance. It's a really gorgeous space, very dimly lit, and it has a nice bottle display in the backyard, and it's quite spacious. So I'd say this is perfect for a interesting or challenging cocktail bar date night. Interesting tidbit. So Hop Sing opened in 2012, and Lay has a record of every person who enters, including those people who have been denied or banned from entry. And there's not much known about Lay, except he's from Vietnam and he's a dapper dresser. So personal fun fact, I snapped a photo before I entered from the gate, and I have a picture, a selfie in the bathroom. I don't know if I'm ever going to do anything with that, because I think if I post it, I will be banned, and I don't know if I want that to happen. But my other personal fun fact is I'm probably the only person in the world that would go to this bar by themselves and order a non-alcoholic drink. Makes me. Okay, so the cost was $19. That's not including tax or gratuity, and it was cash only. Would I go back? I'm not sure. They have a lot of attitude, but who knows? Maybe I will, or maybe I'll try to. I don't know if I'll be allowed entry, but we'll see. I got in once. So the website is hopsinglaundromat.com. So there you have it. That is my solo dining experience, and that is the show. A big thanks to Philly Chef Conference's Mike Trout and to Matt Orlando of Amos Restaurant and Christian Bowman of 108 and The Corner. Their restaurants are in Copenhagen, and they're awesome. So if you ever get out there, I would highly recommend both of them. You can find out more about the conference at phillychefconference.com, and their restaurants are at amosrestaurant.com and 108.dk. Same social media at Philly Chef Conference, at Amosmo, at Amos Restaurant, at Christian Bauman, at 108CPH, and at The Corner _108. My social media is at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as well. Many, many thanks to my engineers, Amanda, who executed this show perfectly today, and to Matt, who helped me edit those interviews down. So I'm very appreciative. So we're going on a little spring break at Heritage Radio. My next live show will be on May 8th at 4 p.m., and that's with August Cardona. Until then, be well, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Sherry Bayer, and always big thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.